Hey, ECHL fans, you can find every episode on the Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Step into the action with ECHL Ice Level, your front row seat to all things ECHL. Experience the thrill of the game through player interviews and insider updates on the league. Hello, everyone. My name is Amanda Arrowsmith.
And I'm Joe Babick. We are ECHL Ice Level hosts.
We'll be dropping a new episode every week throughout the season on Thursdays at 12 p.m. Eastern. You can expect to hear from players, coaches, and staff within the league.
And we have a two-for-one deal today. We have double the guests from the Wheeling Nailers, head coach Derek Army and broadcaster and director of media relations DJ Abicella. Great story with those two, whose relationship actually goes back nearly 20 years to high school time. So we'll get into that here shortly. But just a few weeks before Christmas, and Amanda, and I know we have a special deal going on with Dash right now.
Yeah, we are currently on our first day. Well, today is Tuesday as we're filming. By Thursday, we'll be on day three, but we are in 13 days of Christmas with Dash. We are launching new authentic jerseys for two teams each day, leading up until the 23rd. So make sure to keep an eye on social media for those announcements of which teams are launching. Those will be announced each day at 10 a.m. Eastern. So keep an eye out for that. We had a lot going on this weekend. Indy had their first home opener at their brand new arena. And there was definitely lots of action this weekend, just as every other weekend. Sydney was the first female ECHL referee at Utah this past weekend as well. So congrats to her on that milestone. And all of that is also on our social media. If you want to go take a peek, we had a video piece done with her. And yeah, we're just going into the busy season here, so we'll keep on rolling.
That's right. So let's bring in Derek and DJ and see what's going on in Wheeling. All right, on today's episode, a big-time special episode, we have two for the price of one. We have Derek Army, head coach of the Wheeling Nailers, and DJ Abicella, broadcaster, media and community relations director for the team. So thanks to both of you for joining us today. You basically, with the exception of a few years, have worked together in Wheeling since 2014. But DJ, I'll let you tell the story. The relationship actually goes back way farther than that.
Yeah, it does. And thanks for having us both on. This is a lot of fun. We're both looking forward to it very much. So I attended Scarborough High School. I graduated in 2005, did a lot of work with the different sports teams throughout, but really focused a lot of my attention on soccer and hockey. And I went to my freshman year at the New England School of Communications in Bangor, Maine, but our head hockey coach, Jay Mazur, who, by the way, is an ECHL alum, still wanted to have me be part of the team because I did a lot of work with the statistics, and this was way before the age of analytics, but we were kind of one of the more advanced high schools when it came to tracking different things. So after I graduated, it was Derek's freshman year, so I was able to work with the team while Derek was a player, and obviously that had a really fun time. We were able to have a great friendship then, and now turning that into the pros, as you mentioned, it was quite a few years later, in 2014, but when Derek arrived in Wheeling to make his pro debut, we immediately found each other and we got a chance to catch up a little bit. And now we work together in so many different roles, from being a player to being an assistant coach to now him being our head coach. And it just makes it such a fun atmosphere to be around every day.
Yeah, pretty crazy story that goes, you know, way back high school. In 2014, Derek, you came to Wheeling after graduating college at Providence. So how was that coming into, you know, your first professional experience with a team while also having a familiar face in the rink?
Yeah, it was one for me, like all my life I grew up, it was like I wanted to go to Providence College. I wanted to win a championship at Providence College. So that was kind of my that was my goal. So we lost in the NCAAs, and it was our first time in the NCAAs, and it was like 20 years or something like that. So it was an accomplishment, but it was one that it was kind of like, for me as a hockey player, it's like, this is, what am I supposed to do now? I don't really know. I just was dedicated my whole life to this, and now it's done. And so Clark Donatelli was here in Wheeling, had a connection with the Rhode Islanders, and he had worked my freshman year at Providence College. And so it was familiar face as well with him. There was a couple of players I knew, and it was one, I didn't know what to expect coming out. And I was kind of like, oh, how can it get better? And then you immediately come in, and it was a great group of guys having Deej welcome me. It was faces that, you know, I had known. I started to feel comfortable with the fans kind of welcomed me. And all of a sudden I kind of was like, oh, I love this and I'm part of the team. And although I only played four end of the season games and was able to play in the playoffs, it still was one. I was like, well, I'm, you know, it does get better. It's okay. I'm not at Providence College anymore. So it led me into my first year, which was, you know, really felt comfortable. What was definitely different coming out of school, it was one that was hard to initially, but having Deej, having Clarkie, having some of the players that I knew on the team at the time was made the transition easy.
And DJ, from your perspective, what has it been to see Derek grow and develop and mature from a high school athlete to a pro player to an assistant coach and now to a head coach?
Well, the first thing, I'm very glad that he changed the voicemail on his cell phone. That was hilarious. I don't know why he did it, but for years and years, even when he began as a player, it was still like 15-year-old Derek when you would get his voicemail in the most high-pitched voice ever imaginable. It was the craziest thing. So to have him grow that way was terrific as well. But the fact that Derek came from a hockey family, the fact that his dad, Tim, was a coach, I think he was able to make that transition a lot smoother than a lot of people that you see go from player to coach. And also, I think going to Worcester that first year too, where it wasn't just, hey, I'm coaching all my buddies who I just played with the year before. He was really able, as I said, to make that separation. I am a coach. I am not a player anymore. It was cool to have him here as a player. And I was really rooting for him because I had known him previously. The fact that he was able to come in, score 29 goals as a rookie, I was like, this is great. Because I was trying to pump him up like, oh, you people are going to love him, and really hope to God that, you know, he delivers what I can promise on that. So the fact that he was able to have that success as a player was terrific. And now you've seen him build as a coach and to be able to learn how to coach. And, you know, we had the success his first year as head coach. We beat Fort Wayne in game 7, missed the playoffs. And I know he took it so personally that we missed the playoffs that second year, that he made it his mission to make sure that that would never happen again. Obviously, we get back in last year. We're having the amazing start that we have had this year, and I think he has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, so Derek, was coaching always something that you wanted to do? You know, DJ touched on it a little bit with your father being a coach, and he's now at Anaheim. So was that always a path that you saw yourself going, or was this kind of just, you know, your own thing that you wanted to pursue without any other reflection?
Yeah, so I did always, like, you dream of playing in the NHL and, you know, just like everyone else. And so that's my, you know, that's my goal. But in the back of my mind, from a young age, I did know coaching was ultimately what I wanted to do. And from, you know, even when we were young, I've gone back, I've seen some things, and since it makes sense why I'm a coach now. So like my dad's got sheets when he was with the Anaheim Ducks his first time. So my brother and I were real young. We used to do scouting reports for him. So he'd, at the time, there's no internet. So like he'd have the double monitors. We had the big satellite on the house. So we'd watch all the NHL games. So my job was to make the, like, to break the lines down, get all the combinations right. And so I'd have my sheets that I would do for him. And at this time I was probably 7. And then my brother and I, our room used to be right adjacent to this room. When he then moved to Washington. So when he was with the Capitals, and we could see, and I think he knew it, he kept the door open. So late at night, I would jump into my brother's bed, cause that was where you could see his monitors from. And we'd watch hockey games. My brother and I would sit there and watch the games. He didn't know, but he knew. We were watching, and we were up late. But so that's kind of when I was like, you know, you want to be like your dad growing up. And I got to see what my dad did. And so you want to be like him. And then as we kind of got older, I still, even in high school, started to view the game more so like a coach. And as a player, always try to, you know, keep a big notebook of the coaches I like, what they did, what I did like that they did, what they didn't like. And then, you know, as it came down to it, I did know eventually that's what I wanted to do. And I had the ability to maybe play another year in the American League or sign another deal. And then some opportunities came up in Europe. But for me, I was getting married at the time, and a great opportunity came up with Jamie Russell in Worcester. And it was one that I did know officially at that time. I was like, this is what I want to do coaching wise. So I could delay it if I wanted. But right now, I think this is the right move, is to get into coaching wholeheartedly. And I did know from a young age that that was the goal, whether it was a hockey player or not. I still wanted to play, be in hockey. I love the game too much.
DJ, did you see the makings of a future coach when Derek was a player and was in the locker room and being a leader as a player? Did you see him in this role eventually?
Yeah, I definitely did. I mean, he got named the captain going into his third full year as a pro, so you could definitely sense that he had that leadership ability. And then you figure with the bloodline, there was definitely something that had to be said, you know, about that. It wasn't something that when he retired and I immediately heard his name out there, I was like, oh, shocker. Like, it was like, okay, this definitely checks out. I can see this. And you could just tell the respect that he had in the locker room too. That group was very close, especially the finals year team. Like, you could probably have had about 15 coaches in that group, honestly. But, you know, ultimately he was one that made it completely serious that this was a path that he wanted to go, and he's thrived at it.
So in lieu of this season and this being the 10th episode, we obviously want to congratulate you, DJ, on broadcasting your 1,000th game. Huge milestone for you there.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It meant the world to me.
Yeah. So walk us through just a few of your most memorable moments so far at Wheeling, whether that had been, you know, this past year going into the 1,000th game or anything with Derek leading up.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, my number one all-time favorite call is Riley Brace game 7 in the second round of the 2016 playoffs. That was the second time I'd ever gotten a chance to call a game 7. We had played in one the year before, lost in overtime to Toledo. So that was obviously a bummer. But to get a chance to call an overtime win in a game 7, I mean, first off, to get a chance to call a game 7 is incredible. A win in a game 7 takes it another level. And then to have it be an overtime goal is like, wow, that's something that you dream of doing at some point in your career. And I'm lucky that Jamie Peklitz has the longest goal horn button press in the history of Earth after that goal got scored. So I was able to pause, take it in, and then just absolutely crush the Riley Brace wins game 7 coming out of after I had done the initial score call. And it's a call that has lived for years and years here. People remember it. People know it. So the fact that I was able to create a lasting memory for a team that's been here 33 years, that's incredible. Coming also in that year, we had a triple overtime win against Reading. Again, sorry to the Royals folks, but game 4, Cody Wideout, the best line change that Derek Armey ever made, actually. Derek got off the ice. Wideout got on the ice. Nobody from Reading realized this. And John McCarron threw a pass that I still don't know how connected to this day. He threw it from our goal line to the opposite blue line with sauce on it. And somehow the thing didn't skip to the next county. It actually landed on the tape. Wideo scored on a breakaway. But triple overtime, it's one of those experiences where you never know what it's like until you're there. You're a part of it. You see all the people around you and they're invested. Like, it's 11:30 at night and they're like, you know what? I've already gone 2 overtimes. I'm going until it's over. So you see all those people. We had post-game pizza. I think we were trying to scramble and figure out what on earth to get the players. Like, they may have even been eating pizza between the overtime periods. Like, that's one of those nights. Just the experience of it all, let alone the fact that we won it, which is obviously great. It just makes that whole experience what it was. Going to the finals that year, being able to tell people when you introduce the game, like, you're listening to the Kelly Cup final. Like, that's really, really cool. I had the chance to do an all-star game in Orlando. That was a really neat experience. I'm very fortunate that I got selected to do that. It was a crazy game to call. The pacing, something I never thought I'd see in my life. I was begging for a whistle, but nope, the goalies had to come 59 feet out of the net to play the puck, and we're keeping on going. So it's like, okay, that's fine and dandy. Goalie fights, I've had 2 of those. I've had 2 OT game winners in game 7. I've had 2 goalie fights, so... the one here at home, Francois Brassard, that was something of legend against Utah. So yeah, I've definitely had my fair share of calls that I will remember forever and ever. And luckily, a lot of them have gone our way. So that's very nice.
Derek, it's been a great start this year for you guys on a 13-0-1 run going into this weekend series at Reading. What have been some of the keys to have such a great group of guys and a good start to the season so far?
Yeah, I think for us, the one thing, I think it starts with the core, and we return kind of our core identity. And I think that's the most important thing of being a Nailer is, you know, gets at times can get a bad rap because it isn't Fort Myers, Florida, or Charleston, South Carolina. It's not these, you know, spots that are ideal destinations to travel or bring a bachelor party to or what, you know, whatnot. For us, we take pride in working and in being in Wheeling, West Virginia. And I think it's important. The teams that have had success embody the community. And so for me, that's the most important thing, is to, you know, be invested in the community, be invested in kind of the mentality of a blue collar. You're going to work every day, practice mentality. So we've returned that core, a Koopman, a Kersia, a Laviolette, Jankowski, Drake, Rail, these guys that have kind of like that love being Nailers. And so it's infectious to the guys that are now contracted and around. And so we're lucky to have a lot of really good players. We have a lot of good players that are Wilkes-Barre contracted that hopefully, you know, I think from Pitt's standpoint, value them as prospects to maybe help Pittsburgh Penguins. And so I think you have a perfect storm of, you've got this great core, you've got this identity formed within what it means to be a Nailer. And now, you know, when you're a young prospect or an additional piece, you have to buy into it because your leadership group believes in it. And so I think we've got that perfect storm. And, you know, the play style has worked. We've got a lot of really good hockey players that help play into the way we want to play. We want to play fast. We want to be relentless. And so I think that's really helped us. So there's a lot of factors to it. I think it's just kind of a perfect storm of, you know, really buying in. And then on top of it, you know, the sprinkles on the whole Sunday is, you got some really good goaltenders. And so that helps, in that I think the organization is deep goaltending wise. And so having Gauthier goalie of the year, and then Sergei, who's now rookie goalie of the month, is a, you know, helps add to that as well, and helps give your forwards confidence to go and attack.
You kind of touched on it a bit there, but Kyle Dubas, the GM in Pittsburgh, he's been a guy who's kind of seen the ECHL for what it is, going back to his time in Toronto, always had a bunch of contracts in Newfoundland, and now kind of similar with you guys, a lot of contracts there. So how have you seen the relationship with Pittsburgh grow over the years, and how important is that for you as an organization?
It's something that I lived, obviously, a few years ago when we had those teams, when I came out of school, and then obviously the Kelly Cup finals year. And so as a mentality, I truly believe is the AA system, the baseball system. And I'm a baseball fan. So, you know, you see the prospects go from all the way up. And there's no set path, and they start in Double A, and you got to find success and you work your way up. And that year in from 13-14, so I kind of came in the end of that year all the way through, I think 15-16. So that 3-year span, there ended up being, I think, 6 NHLers on that, those Nailers teams. There was, I think, 4 that won the Stanley Cup. And so I was able to see in those stretch, that Penguins organization truly believed in Wheeling as a development. And we saw Tom Kuhnhackl and Carter Rowney, who were two crucial pieces to the Stanley Cup, Kuhnhackl especially, to both, come through Wheeling and have extended time in Wheeling. So for me, it's always been something that I truly believe, if you want to get a competitive advantage of an organization, you have to be able to use the ECHL to what it is development. And it's been wonderful to have Kyle come in with that same mentality, and the organization stress that they want not just, you know, hockey players, but trainers and coaches and staff that can then become NHLers. And I think organizations can take note of that. But for us right now, it's a blending of that mindset. And for me, it's important, if I do my job well, you know, the hope is that there's next year in a week or in 2 years that some of these guys play for the Pittsburgh Penguins and help them, you know, win games. And so that's the goal. As an organization, Kyle does a great job and Jason Spezza do a great job in communication and keeping valuing the ECHL. So the coaches, you know, were able to sit in with Mike Sullivan and listen to, you know, how he approaches things with the Pittsburgh Penguins, what their mentality is as coaches, their identity, their philosophy, and then, you know, it's organization-wide. So myself, I'm able to stay in contact with Kirk McDonald, who's a great guy and coach, obviously an ECHL guy as well. And so I think it's important organizationally. Kyle's created a great model and mindset throughout the organization that we want everyone to develop. We want everyone to win. And so I think it's, you know, playing out right now.
I want to bounce this conversation quick to you, DJ. Just tell us how, you know, as a broadcaster, you're digesting the game, you're actively calling it while all the action is going on. So what have just been some things that you've noticed that have led the team to the success that they're experiencing this season so far?
I mean, there's so many different areas. Like, you don't go 15-3-1 accidentally, obviously. Derek said you started off in the nets. Like, one of the things that I have noticed with my teams here over the years is when you have a team with goaltending, it has a really good chance of being a game changer. It may not necessarily win you the game every night, but it can certainly help you from losing a game on a certain night. And no matter who he's thrown in that net this year, obviously Murashov's gotten a lot of the recognition early on, but Gauthier, Caster, Richardson have all done a terrific job. And I think you can see the confidence feeding off the rest of the players, especially when they make a big save at a key time in the game. We're like, okay, I mean, we've seen it a few times this year where, you know, we had just given up a tying goal in Fort Wayne to make it 4-4 in the third period. But Sergei was right there, made a huge save on a penalty kill right after that. And they're like, okay, you know what? We're all right. We'll be able to rebuild quickly. And then you quickly saw that 5-4 went Wheeling's way a few minutes later. So I think that they were able to say, okay, you know what? Even though we just gave one up, we are in perfectly great shape with the hands that we have back there. The forward depth has been incredible to see. Also, the way that Derek's been able to keep the lines together. And that's something that I don't think you can stress enough. We are in the ECHL. It is the ever-changing hockey league. That's the acronym that I use for it. And you do see tons of changes throughout. The fact that this lineup has been able to pretty much stay together with the exception of one here, one there, and the lines have been able to stay together so the guys aren't constantly looking over their shoulder and saying, who am I with tonight? I have no idea. I think that chemistry has really helped. They're such a talented group up there as well. And then your defense, too, on both sides of the puck, where you have players like Louis Rail, who's been able to step up more offensively this year. He has 3 goals. That's matching his career high. You have a guy like Chris Ortiz, traditionally an offensive guy. I've seen him throw the body more this year than I think I saw in his first 2 years combined here. So you're seeing all the different pieces of the puzzle come together. Special teams. I mean, my gosh, the fact that they're something like 12-0 when not allowing a power play goal, that speaks to the discipline, that speaks to the penalty kill, and that speaks to what an important part of the game that is. So the fact that we've seen all of this come together in the first 19 games has been incredible to see. It makes it entertaining as all heck for me to be able to watch and our fans to be able to watch and to be able to really enjoy what we have going on here.
Yeah, I'm certainly excited to see how things go the rest of the season for you guys. And DJ, I always love turning on your games. I'm like, I know the voice. I've heard you refer to me in the games. You're like, clip this one, Amanda. I'm like, I'm already on it.
But yeah, it's nice to have that rapport with you guys and be able. That's one of the things I enjoy the most about it, especially at this level where you're not necessarily broadcasting to the masses of just like an entire gigantic media market. Like, you have the ability to relate with the fans, talk to them as individuals, talk to you, Joe, you know, kind of poke fun at you guys if I get the opportunity to. And that's what makes it such, you know, a personable type of atmosphere.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to move into some questions from the fans that we got on social media. So the first one is directed towards Derek. What do you tell your players about the type of play that's expected in Wheeling?
Yeah, so kind of going with identity. For me as a player, you know, all coming up was always, you know, work ethic and compete and being relentless were kind of stressed to me. And so that was my identity as a player coming up, was these are the things I believe in and I believe in life. And then now as a coach, it's the same expectations. I know in terms of development, we're going to make mistakes. Our players are going to make mistakes. I want them to. That's how you're going to learn and get better. But the biggest thing is, are you working? Do you compete? And are you relentless in your pursuit to get to the NHL? So you're off the ice habits, your gym, you know, whatever it is, are you relentless to get better? And then, you know, you do an extra in video. But for me, everything I do in life is competing. My wife doesn't always love that, but it's one that's just who I am. And so I expect the same thing out of the guys that I coach is, are you competing? And so these are the things, those are kind of the key points for me. And then on top of that, it's just being a good teammate, you know, if you're coming from Wilkes or if you're coming in from wherever, is you're a good teammate. That's what matters most. And winning is what helps everyone get to the next level. So those are kind of some of the points that I stress and I truly believe in. And so if you make a mistake, or, you know, we're going to have bad games, we're not going to have it. But if the compete's there and the work ethic's there, then I can live with that. And so those are kind of the key points with being a Nailer.
DJ, you had the chance earlier this year to call your first American Hockey League game for Wilkes-Barre Scranton. Haven't had the chance to do an NHL game yet, but what would be your ultimate career goal?
Yeah, NHL is definitely the number one goal. And to get that opportunity in Wilkes-Barre this year was really special. The fact that they were able to reach out to me a couple weeks before the season, Nick called me up. They had to split their radio and TV that night because of Penn State football. And he said, hey, I wanted to gauge your interest on coming up to Wilkes-Barre. And I'm thinking, yeah, sure. What are we talking here? And he goes, oh, to call our season opener. I'm like, wow, yes, absolutely. That would be an absolute thrill. And so that was super cool to get a chance to go up there. They treated me like gold. I mean, they had me go in the day before, get situated, got to go into the morning skate, talk to people, learn the setup, learn the format, because they have a few different things that we have. I actually had to run the game myself, which I don't do here. I have a board op. So getting a chance to figure all of that information out, then take my whole afternoon to prep it. So I was ready. Like, there was nobody that was going to stand in my way that day. I was bound, determined, focused, like I was going to go in and crush that broadcast. And I heard a lot of great feedback from a lot of people that I asked. I said, give it to me straight. Like, don't just tell me I did a good job because you want to make me feel good. Like, tell me about what you thought. And a lot of people said that I had great pacing on it, because that's a game that, you know, the emotions of first AHL game. Season opener, there's 13 goals. Like, that can easily get away from you and you can start going off the rails, which Joe thankfully has, you know, been very nice to me on the few times that he would not like to, but that I've gone off the rails in the ECHL. But yeah, ultimately, you know, to get to the AHL, to get to the NHL, if I could get a chance to call an NHL game, don't care who it's for, like at some point in my career, that would be the ultimate dream come true.
He's like, Derek's like, are you sure you answered that?
I think he would care. If it was the Montreal Canadiens, I don't know if he'd be too thrilled as a Bruins guy.
This is a question for both of you. Favorite NHL player or goaltender?
Ooh, right, currently or all time?
Right. Let's do all time.
Okay, all time. My favorite player was Steve Yzerman growing up. And then favorite goaltender... hard to not say. Oh, for me, Olaf Kolzig. Godzilla was good to me when I was young. So as a kid, I always loved rooting for him. And so those would be my two.
Growing up, I was huge with Joe Thornton. Growing up in New England, big Bruins fan. I loved what he was able to do for the Bruins. But I also loved the carefree personality. The fact that it looked like he hadn't shaved in about 15 years. It was pretty funny to me. The fact that he was just that super chill personality in the locker room, really went out of his way to want to have fun. Like, that's one of the biggest things for me. Like, talent is great, but I want to see somebody who has a personality. And for me, Thornton did that. I will say, like, it kind of goes along with my broadcasting style a little bit as well. But I go towards the Brad Marchand as well today, just because there's a lot of people that really despise him. He's one that you either love him or you hate him. And there's a lot of reasons why you fall into both of those departments. So I'll go that side of things. Goalie, that's a heck of a question.
It's a Bruin for sure, but.
Reggie Lemelin, right?
Yeah, okay, sure. There you go. Yeah. But you know what? I appreciate Fleury, though, for the same reason that I appreciate the other guys, that he clearly has fun. He has that personality. He'll pull the pranks. Like, that's fun. I enjoy seeing that.
As a coach, Derek, can it be hard to keep the magic alive with constant roster changes at this level, especially when it comes to goaltenders?
It's you know, that's never easy. You know, sometimes your forwards are stock full and your D aren't, and sometimes your goalies are, you know, scrambly. You were projected to have two, and now all of a sudden you're on your third call-up goaltender. And so it can be tough at times managing that. And that's where I think the core is so important, having the identity that we have set from day one. So whoever comes in, this is the expectation. And so one of the things that for me is always preached is, no matter who's in, you know, the expectation is to win. And I always use Deej as an example. I always say, if Deej is in net, I still expect you to win, which
he might not.
I don't know if it'll be the case, but that's the expectation. So I think it is something that it's tricky, but that's the exciting part of this league is you got to find a way to help motivate the guys or help get them through, whether it's a strategy change or whatnot. But that's the beauty of being the ECHL.
You don't know how many times that line is used over the course of a year. I'm in net quite a bit, according to the way Derek presents it.
Well, that's a wrap on the questions from fans. I'm going to go through a quick game with you guys. I don't want to miss out on this. It's called This or That. So I'm going to run through. We're just going to go rapid fire, and you're both going to answer at the same time. So I'll give you two options, and you'll just spit out whichever one speaks to you.
Okay.
All right. First one, black tape or white tape?
Black.
White. Oh, sorry. I should have said at the same time. That's on me.
No, it's okay.
It's not me.
It's fine. Five hole or bar down?
Bar down.
Bar down.
Pre-game snack or nap?
Nap. Pre-game snack.
Nap.
I knew the answer was coming, DJ.
I knew DJ was going food on
that one. Yeah. Well, just real quick, he's got me doing man versus food on Wednesday at the casino here. He was all excited to get that going.
Oh, my God. Miracle or Mighty Ducks?
Mighty Ducks.
Wrist shot or slap shot?
Slap shot.
Yeah, I don't take a good one, but I'll go slap shot because who doesn't want to see 100?
Practice or game?
Game.
Goal score or shutdown defense?
Goal score.
Goal score.
All right, well, that's a wrap. I want to thank you both, Derek and DJ, for taking time out of your day to come talk to us today. Give the listeners just a little more insight on both of you, the ins and outs in the game, in the rink, in practice. So we appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much. And real quick, I got to know, because obviously it's ECHL followers. For those of you, everyone's listening to Deej around the league. And Deej can sometimes get a hard time from opposing fans. He loves that he gets a hard time from you opposing fans. But I will tell you, you would love to have him as your announcer, commentator. You would love to have him in your organization. He is the best guy in the world. He loves what he does. He loves his team, and he's loyal to his team. And so for me, that means the world. So everyone in the ECHL and the fans, he garners interest, whether or not you love it or not. He is that, and I think we can all appreciate that. Say thank you for 1,000 games and everything you do, Deej. And thank you guys for everything as well and for having us. It means the world for me. I believe in this league wholeheartedly. I love this league. I love Wheeling. I can't speak enough good things. So just appreciate that I get to spread that word.
They didn't take the opportunity to do a this or that to make us go against each other.
Yeah, I know.
favorite MLB team.
Ah, Yankees.
Red Sox.
Neither got Soto, so here we are.
Well, awesome. Thanks again for coming on. We appreciate your time and best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you both. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks again to Derek and DJ for joining us. Fun time with them. We wish them good luck as the season continues, as they look to continue their hot streak. They'll be in Reading this weekend. You can catch those games, as always, on Flow Hockey. We'll see everyone again next week. Make sure you like, subscribe, rate our podcast. You can follow us on social media at ECHL Hockey on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and at ECHL on X. Thanks for listening, everybody.